Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast, the book segment, the guest segment. This is, we have a wonderful guest for you today. I'm not going to tell you his name for a few seconds. Remember, we always have every Tuesday a new release on News of the Week, and especially what it means for you. It's not just News of the Week, it's how you can live at the top of your curve till very near the end. That's the A segment. The B, these great guests. Today's guest, Matthew Prescott, the author of Food is the Solution. You want to go to his website, foodisthesolutionbook.com, or Matthew, M-A-T-T-H-E-W, Prescott, P-R-E-S-C-O-T-T.com, to find out more. There are 80 interesting and good for the planet recipes. And Matthew, thank you for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now tell me, is the Food is the Solution begs the question to what problem? What problem is food the solution to?
Yeah, you know, my book focuses primarily on the environmental impact of what we eat. You know, a lot of people don't realize, for example, that it takes over 50 gallons of water to produce one single egg, or that it takes 2,000 gallons of water to produce a pound of steak. And, you know, when we eat animal-based foods, we're supporting a system that is really detrimental to our land, to our air quality, to water quality and usage, to climate change. And so my book proposes simply that we add more plant-based foods into our diet. It doesn't suggest that we only eat those foods, but just that we can all enjoy more plant-based foods, you know, products made from whole grains and produce and beans and legumes and other kinds of protein-rich, delicious products that have a lighter environmental impact.
Now, one of the things would say, why didn't you go the full route and say we shouldn't have any animal products?
Well, you know, there are definitely some people in the world who are ready to make that switch. I don't need any animal products. I've had a plant-based vegan diet for almost 20 years now. But there are a lot of folks who want to lend a hand or lend a fork, so to speak, and they're not quite ready to completely ditch meat, dairy, and eggs entirely. And so this book is really for folks who want to help out, who want to get on the path toward healthier, more environmentally friendly eating, but might not be ready to take that plunge fully. Now, all the recipes in the book are 100% plant-based, so for anybody who is ready to take that plunge, it's a great book for them as well.
And let's talk about some of the things, because when I look at a book, I say food is the solution, and I say our major problem is the chronic disease that is present in people due to obesity, due to lifestyle changes. We're not walking as much. We're gaining weight. We're much stressed. We're still exposed to toxins. In a lot of the toxins seem in the air and even in water seem to me to come from industrial processes. How much of that is from food processes versus other manufacturing? In other words, if you think about it, yeah, the smartphone has a lot of other things in it that are heavy metals, et cetera, that might be toxins in their production. I don't know what percent. How much of, in other words, when you're saying food is the solution, if we did only vegetarian, would we stop, if you will, the toxin pollution by 10%, by 40%, or is it part of the solution, or is it really the solution?
Well, I think in terms of percentages, that depends on what your lifestyle is and where you live. If you live near, if you live near a factory that's putting, you know, smoke right into your backyard every day, you know, food is going to be a solution, but you've got other problems to deal with as well. But we know that in terms of disease, you know, heart attack, cancer and stroke are the three biggest killers in America. We know that those are directly linked to diets that are heavy in meat and dairy and eggs. We know that those products are packed with cholesterol, which lead to major health problems, major health
epidemics. Yeah, it's actually, and just so for the record, Matthew, it's probably not the cholesterol in them. Because grass-fed beef still causes the same problems. It is actually the carnitine, lecithin, and choline that change the bacteria inside you that produce a very inflammatory protein that causes the inability to fight cancer, the immune system dysfunction, the heart dysfunction, and the mental dysfunction that occurs long-term with those. So they are a problem, but it isn't, and so it's the same type of problem, but it isn't the relating to the cholesterol change.
Sure, and cholesterol, of course, does bear impact on, you know, things like heart disease and stroke if our arteries become clogged because we're eating cholesterol and saturated fat-rich foods. And if the arteries to our brain become clogged, as you know, many listeners.
Yeah, but it isn't you're clear on it. Yeah, for the future too, it isn't the cholesterol in the food or the saturated fat in the food that causes the problem with raised blood cholesterol. That's a small effect on raising cholesterol and causing heart disease, as opposed to the carnitine, lecithin, and choline from egg yolks, red meat, cheese, and dairy that causes an inflammation that is more than 90% of the heart attack risk and cancer risk of red meat. Go ahead.
It's certainly a huge problem. And in terms of toxins, industrial meat products and fish products are full of toxins. When we look at PCBs, for example, fish, especially salmon, is one of the primary sources of PCBs and other industrial toxins, which may, for example, play a role in the development of diabetes. And that's not to mention the impact of industrial animal agriculture on communities in terms of their health. You know, I talk to people who live on the eastern shore of Maryland, where there are all these major poultry farms now. They can't go outside because the air quality is so bad. The stuff they're breathing in that's being put out of these poultry farms makes it so go outside. There are hordes of flies or buzzards flying overhead. You know, I talk to people in upstate New York who live next to a major dairy farm. They say they turn on their faucets sometimes to find actual cow manure just coming right out of the faucet because it's so bad up there now. The list just kind of goes on and on. And so what my book tries to do is basically show a better path forward. If we want to eat healthier, if we want to eat more sustainably, if we want to have a better impact on the planet, one thing that we can all do, regardless of our diet or how meat heavy it might be, is just eat more plants. We can all enjoy products that are really delicious and that have a lighter impact on the planet and that are better for us.
So in your book, you have a number of recipes. I think it's more than 80 that are largely or that are totally plant-based. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. And you know, the recipes range in difficulty. They range in ingredients. A lot of the recipes I tried to just focus on ingredients that you can find at any market or that you might have laying around the house. There's a recipe for, you know, oyster mushrooms and lentils, kind of an oyster mushroom and lentil stew, you know, nothing super exotic. You've got recipes for, mac and cheese made with cashew cream instead of cheese. Kind of simple ingredients that can help us all eat a little bit better. And that's what I try to focus the recipes on. Some of them, you know, for people who are more culinarily inclined, a few of the recipes get a little bit more intricate or difficult for people who like to spend a lot of time in the kitchen. But for the most part, it's really simple foods that we can all try more of.
Now, let me go and say so that when I got this, and I'm not food naive, but I'm pretty food naive compared to one of the recipes I looked at in the book, not all of them, obviously, but one of them was crispy rice paper bacon. And I said to myself, I don't know what rice paper bacon is. And I asked three other people and they didn't either. So tell us what rice paper bacon is. Cause I said, what is it?
Yeah.
It's very thin bacon. And I said, no, it isn't that when I Googled it.
Yeah, you know, rice paper bacon, there's a recipe in there. Basically, if you've ever had a spring roll at, you know, a Chinese restaurant or a Thai food restaurant, that thing that that is encased in is rice paper. It's something, it's made out of rice, really thin kind of paper. It comes hard, and when you soak it in water, it gets really soft. And so what I've done in the book is used rice paper along with a marinade of ingredients like soy sauce and maple syrup and smoked paprika and garlic to make a kind of smoky bacon-type flavor. You coat the rice paper in this marinade to soften it up, and then you bake it on parchment paper, and it crisps up and bubbles up, just like bacon does. You know, it's not a one-for-one stand-in to bacon, but it's great on a BLT. It's great as a side to your breakfast with that same kind of taste and texture, that same crisp, that same smoky flavor as bacon without pork.
And so this is an interesting version. How long does it take to make this? And if you will, how often can people get it right early on?
Yeah, that recipe takes only about 30.
Dipping it in the marinade, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. You can dip it or you can kind of spread it on with a brush. There are all different kinds of methods that work here, but it takes about 30 minutes to make. The more you make it, the shorter it's going to take, obviously. You know, I would say the most difficult part of that recipe is cutting the rice paper in strips. It can be a little bit fickle and it can kind of crumble. It took me... it took me a couple times practicing cutting it into strips before I got it right. But once I figured it out, it's just like clockwork. And, you know, I think this is it's funny that you bring up that recipe because I think it's really indicative of something I try to do in the book, which is make kind of familiar products, bacon or macaroni and cheese or whatever it might be, that, you know, we know the animal-based version of them very well. And I try to just kind of make something similar out of plants to see, you know, what we can do with plant-based ingredients.
Now, I gave this to our executive chef here at the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute, and he said, geez, there's an awful lot of sugar and simple carbs in some of the recipes. Did you try and work through those, or is that just he hit some weird recipes in it?
Yeah, it kind of just spans the gamut. The book is intended to help us improve our impact on the world while also becoming a little bit healthier. It's not a health food book per se. So it does include sugars. It does include, you know, all-purpose white flour in some of the recipes. A lot of the recipes don't include that stuff. There's a recipe for rainbow veggie sushi that's basically brown rice and nori and vegetables with a little bit of rice vinegar, and that's essentially it. And,
yes,
you know,
no,
there are a lot of recipes in there.
He did cook me a couple of these when I didn't have time that were delicious yesterday, so I should tell you that. Tell us.
Oh, great. I'm glad to hear
now, it. Go and talk to me more about hogs, raising hogs and raising chickens and cows and even salmon and what toxicities there are. Because, in other words, how do we get rid of? You said one of the things is that salmon were a reservoir for PCBs, polychlorobiphenols, and I eat an awful lot of salmon. And so how do I avoid that?
Well, it's tough to do. Some people point to fish farming, but fish farming is really just kind of raising fish in a toxic soup. I saw a video actually just yesterday online of an industrial fish farm, and it was really striking to see just how crammed into these tanks these fish live, living in their own waste, swimming in their own waste. It's so bad that fish farms have to pump these tanks full of antibiotics just to keep the fish alive through conditions that are so dirty they would otherwise die. And a lot of industrial meat is produced in that same way. You hear a lot about antibiotics in meat. Part of the reason why farm animals are given so many antibiotics nowadays is just because they live in conditions that are so toxic and so dirty, they might not make it through if it weren't for that. You know, pigs live confined in tiny little gestation crates where they can't even turn around. Chickens, eggs live in cages, you know, 5 to 7 birds in a cage about the size of a file cabinet drawer, so small they can barely spread a wing. And the list goes on and on. And so, you know, the solution that I propose in my book is just that we eat less of those products. Let's just eat more plant-based. We can make, you know, breakfast scramble out of tofu instead of eggs that, you know, tastes wonderful, is protein-packed, is healthier for us, you know, have, you know, better health snaps, certainly. And, you know, we can make bacon out of rice paper or we can make, you know, risotto and you know, sausages and all kinds of products entirely from plant-based ingredients and just avoid those problems entirely.
Well, now tell me, because when we looked at, this is us from the Dr. Oz show, when we looked at rice farming, for example, in the United States, so much of it had been done on former cotton fields. And the cotton fields used arsenic as a pesticide or herbicide. And so that's why American rice has much more that. How much of the heavy metals is in the areas that we have grown vegetables in? And do you have to worry about that, or is this just a one-off on rice?
I think it's mostly a one-off on rice, although, you know, our agricultural system is totally out of whack in so many ways. You know, one of the things I talk about in the book is how, like, we use animals now as just kind of a middleman in the agricultural system, which is really inefficient if you think about it. You know, we grow all of this agricultural land to grow all of this grain, all of this soy, all of this corn. We don't feed it to humans. We feed it first to animals as a middleman to fatten them up, to raise them. Then we, you know, we raise the animals, we send them off to slaughter, and, you know, the rest is obviously history. But what we can do is we can just cut out that middleman. We can raise, you know, grow crops directly for human consumption. It's much more resource efficient to do. We don't have to cut down rainforests in order to grow feed for cattle. We don't have to cut down forests to grow grazing land for cattle or to put chicken houses on. It's just a much more efficient, cleaner process. It's not perfect by any means. You're right. There are problems with rice production. There are, you know, all kinds of problems with soil quality when you're growing, you know, root vegetables and other kind of products. But on the whole, it looks like a very kind of clean, simple path forward to at least alleviating some of these problems and eating a better diet is just to eat more plants.
And now let's go back to the person who is committed. So I basically am a pescatarian with only two fish. I eat ocean trout and wild salmon. But probably a lot of the, quote, wild salmon I'm getting is farm-raised. So is there anything I can do to avoid it, or is wild salmon a lot better, or is it not much better?
You know, wild caught fishing practices have just gone totally haywire. There's a basic scientific consensus now around the fact that if we don't stop fishing the oceans as much as we are now, there's literally all of the world's fisheries are going to collapse by 2048, which isn't that far away. There's not going to be any fish left in the sea, basically, because we're just pulling so many of them up. And the practices they use to catch fish in the wild involve, you're dragging nets many miles long behind ships. You know, these are nets that might be 5 miles long, and they just pull up everything in their wake, not just, you know, ocean trout or whatever it is they're trying to catch, but also porpoises, you know, sea lions, sea turtles, shark, coral reef, whatever's in the way of those nets, it's getting pulled up. And so, you know, this is one of the reasons why I cut fish out of my diet many years ago. I grew up in coastal New England where, you know, right on the ocean, where, of course, you know, seafood is very prevalent, to say the least. And I grew up going to lobster bakes and fish fries and all that stuff. And I cut it out when I learned about this stuff because I just, you know, I didn't want to have anything to do with it. By all means, there are local fishermen out there and there are local farmers, you know, throughout the country that are not employing these practices. But by and large, 99% of the fish and the meat we eat come from these types of industrial systems.
And so it's even in the, quote, wild salmon, it's tough to get good wild salmon. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and farmed as well. You know, a lot of people don't realize that farmed fish eat wild-caught fish. You know, some of the feed that they give to farmed fish is basically ground-up fish meal that comes from wild-caught fish. So, you know, for some people say, oh, I only eat farmed fish, well, those fish are eating fish, you know, dredged out of the ocean. In fact, a fish farm may feed their fish more fish than they're actually farming. It's kind of like a tongue twister, and it is actually twisted. It's just a kind of a screwy system they've developed here. And so a lot of people are just either cutting this stuff out entirely, like me, or a lot of other people are reducing the amount that they eat. A lot of people now are doing things like Meatless Monday, or they're eating smaller portions of meat. The author Mark Bittman advocates a program called Vegan Before 6 p.m., where before 6 p.m. you eat a vegan diet, and then after 6 p.m., you know, anything goes, just as a way to kind of create better balance on the plate. And, you know, my take is it's all good. I think there's a place for healthier, more sustainable eating at the table for everybody, whether you want to go fully vegan, whether you want to do Meatless Mondays, whether you want to just eat smaller portions of this stuff. You know, I say it's all good.
Now, one of the things that is so amazing in your book is this picture on, or the graph of water consumption. Since we are a planet that's short on clean water, steak takes 2,000 gallons per pound, as opposed to, if you will, beans, lentils, and peas, which are 5 gallons per gram of protein. So I guess if you were a pound and a pound, and you said there are 100 grams of I don't know how many grams of protein in a pound of lentils, but let's just say even then it's at least a 40-to-1 ratio.
Yeah, really, you know, you look at a burger, for example, hamburger, 600 gallons of water to produce one hamburger. Veggie burger, that's only 42 gallons of water. So, you know, pound for pound, burger for burger, nugget for nugget, if you will, plant-based foods just use much less water. And it's because they don't require that middleman. You know, you think when you eat a chicken nugget, that chicken obviously has lived, you know, and they've had to drink water. But more than that, all the crops that were grown to produce the feed that chicken eats, or that cow eats, that requires huge amounts of water to grow all those crops. And we lose a lot in the process. You know, even in the most efficient cases, meat production, you know, a farm animal only converts around 11% of what they call feed energy into human food. That means that calorically speaking, 89% of the inputs that we put into that animal, you know, feed, water, et cetera, is just wasted. And we only get 11% back out. It's a really wasteful, really inefficient process. And that's why it takes, you know, so much more water to produce a beef burger than it does a veggie burger. And, you know, the thing I say in my book, you know, as I've alluded to, is it doesn't mean you can never eat beef burgers. I don't ever eat them. I know a lot of people who don't ever eat them. But, you know, it just means maybe try more of the plant-based stuff.
So try more. Food is the solution for helping our planet, for a greener planet and a healthier you. We've been talking with Matthew Prescott, MatthewPrescott.com, or Food is the Solution book. .com is the way to find out about more of this and to see these great recipes. If nothing else, you'll try the rice paper bacon, as it tastes delicious. And I never knew that it was what it actually was. And he's got a great recipe. I can tell you, we did try it yesterday. It was delicious. I haven't had bacon in whatever it is, 30 years. But rice paper bacon brought back that taste. Hopefully we'll get you to replace Michael Simon's regular bacon with rice paper bacon, because Michael Simon, we consider the leading purveyor of patients to the Cleveland Clinic, because everything he has, at least in Cleveland, seems like it's wrapped in bacon. Maybe he should wrap it in rice paper bacon. In any case, we've been talking with Matthew Prescott. The book, Food is the Solution, What to Eat to Save the World, is eye-opening. Thanks very much, Matthew, for coming on. And thank you for downloading us and listening. Remember, every week, new episode every Tuesday. 51,000 of you can't be wrong every week, I hope. So keep downloading us and keep telling your friends about us. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. Thanks again.